For most of the past century, homeowners used their houses as piggy banks. A steady rise in value meant that generations were able to use home equity to send their kids to college, to pay for home improvements, and to provide for their retirement. And that was all before the bubble. Afterwards, it now looks like those days are gone for good. While the housing market will recover eventually, analysts say it may never recover all the value lost and that homeowners should not expect their property to perform much above the rate of inflation. So what role does your house play in your investments? 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. You can join the conversation at our website. That's at npr.org. Click on Talk of the Nation. Joining us now from his office in Seattle is Stan Humphries, chief economist for the real estate site Zillow.com. And nice to have you on the program today.
Hi, Neil. How are you?
I'm well. And the long-term view, there's some fascinating studies that find research by various opinion surveys show that people expect their homes to accumulate 10% in value over the next decade.
That's right. Yeah, it's it's amazing how high people's expectations about real estate appreciation have been set, and that's largely a phenomena of the past, really since the late 90s, when real estate markets started to see above average appreciation rates, and people got used to these. You know, right before the market peaked, you were seeing in some markets appreciation rates of between 15% to 30% year-over-year increases, which were clearly not sustainable. Really, over the long term, real estate returns more in the 2% to 4% range, and I think people have forgotten that given the heady appreciation in the past years.
But there's been heady depreciation over the past couple of years, 30%.
That's right, yeah. I mean, you know, currently we're down in home values from peak on our index, we're down about 24-25% from peak, and values have been reset about 6 years nationally, and many markets have been reset further than that. So substantial depreciation in real estate prices. But I think people think that the this current downturn is just a blip, and that once we're past this, we're going to go back to we're going to see more of a V-shaped recovery in the housing market, and we'll go back to very high appreciation rates. And unfortunately, I don't think that's in the offing for us.
And why not? I mean, not maybe the boom period of the bubble, but why not the post-war period where housing steadily improved over inflation?
Well, it's important to remember that there are certain periods, and particularly the post-war period, when you were bringing in a lot of additional housing demand. So you had a fairly suppressed period of demand during both the Great Depression and during the war years, and then you had, on top of that, returning veterans and also new mortgage products that made housing within the reach of a lot more Americans. You had a GI Bill, which also brought increased the ability for returning veterans to get into the market. So you really kind of goosed demand during that period of time, and so that's probably not a good analogy to look at either. But if you look, typically over the a longer period of history in the housing market, 2% to 4%, which roughly tracks inflation, or alternatively also tracks the growth in household income, that's typically what you find, and that you will see periods of time when various markets will exceed that appreciation rate. But those tend to be transitory periods, and typically there's a payback for those excesses as well in terms of flatter appreciation after that, or downturns like we're seeing now.
So as opposed to the biggest and most important investment for the family, maybe houses should be regarded as something like a giant car, or something that is a durable good that eventually you use up.
That's right. I don't think that's a bad analogy. I mean, essentially, housing is a utility that you consume, like electricity, or like goods that you consume. We consume housing as a utility. It's a place that's a shelter for us. And there are some examples where housing can be good investments. But most people should think of housing as a utility that is, it's typically a non-depreciating asset, so that's a good news. So it's not exactly like a car. It does tend to, increase over time, at least track inflation, which cars would do the opposite. But people should be thinking a little bit more pragmatically about the fact that it's a place to live, and I think you are seeing a change in how people think about that, of they're approaching the buy versus rent decision a bit more pragmatically. I think before it was imbued with a little bit of the aura of the American dream, and it had a little bit of an aura around the buying decision. And I think now people are approaching that with a little bit more pragmatism and actually, you know, whipping out the calculator now and trying to figure out, wow, if I'm going to be in this house for 4 or 5 years, I really want to know whether renting is better than buying. And I think that's probably a good thing for the American consumer.
And there was an article yesterday in the New York Times that addressed a fading confidence in building wealth from investing in real estate, which says if the long term is grim, the short term is grimmer.
That's right. Yeah. I mean, we're talking here about the historical appreciation rates getting back to a level of 2 to 4% and how that's far below what people expect. But unfortunately, in the near term, we'll be lucky to even get back to that rate. Near term, we're expecting home values to continue to decline for the rest of this year and reach a bottom in the latter part of this year. But when we hit bottom, we think that because of a variety of factors in the housing market right now, we're going to see below normal appreciation for the next 3 to 5 years, below normal being 2 to 4%. So we're going to see very low appreciation for the near term while we work through the enormous backlog of foreclosures, a lot of negative equity, 1 in 5 single-family homeowners being in negative equity right now, and very high inventory levels of for-sale homes. Right now, 12 and a half months of inventory on the market. So it's going to take us a while. Essentially, that's the hangover after the party, which was the housing recession. We've had kind of a car crash after the housing boom, where we've had just precipitous declines, and that's going to draw to a close now. But after that, we're going to have now the hangover, which is below normal periods of appreciation, and while we work through this, the larger economic factors facing the housing market.
And when you talk about negative equity, that's what we refer to as houses being underwater, where you owe more than your mortgage.
That's correct. And by our calculation, about 21.5% of single-family homeowners with mortgages are currently in that condition, which is exactly as you say. Their mortgage is worth more than their home, which really has some pretty deleterious effects in the housing market. One, it radically increases the foreclosure rates because households that face financial shocks of reduction in hours or loss of jobs, typically they would be able to either tap equity in their house or sell their house to reduce their monthly payments. But in the presence of negative equity, they can't do that, and it leads to increased foreclosure rates.
So if you sell your house, you're going to still owe money on it. You're not going
to
get any money out of it.
You have to bring money to closing.
Yeah,
it's really almost an un-American concept.
We're talking with Stan Humphries, chief economist for the real estate site Zillow.com, to emphasize his point. I think the existing home sales, the numbers we got today, plunged 27.2% in July, and that's obviously short term, and obviously it depends where you are. Some places worse off than others, but nevertheless, those are not encouraging numbers. To what extent is your house your investment? 800-989-8255. Email us talk@npr.org. Ned's on the line calling from Santa Rosa, California.
Hi, thanks for the time. There is a little loophole you can use financially to overcome some of these restrictions, and that is to refinance with an assumable loan. Now, back in the day, 20 years ago, assumable loans were quite common. You can get a private placement of an assumable loan. You might even have to pay only a basis point higher for a mortgage. So what will happen is when you sell your house in the future, interest rates will most certainly be much higher than they are now, and you will make a lot of money on your house because the person buying it will be buying your low payment mortgage.
And mortgage rates are at historic lows.
What about that?
What do you think, Stan Humphries?
Yeah, I think if you could get a mortgage product like that, that would be fantastic because you are essentially not only locking in the interest rate for yourself, but also for anyone who assumes the loan going forward. I think it's a relatively rare mortgage product, precisely, and typically is priced a fair bit higher because they're having to price in the lender's risk to interest rate fluctuations, which right now they would be acutely sensitive to, since we are at a historically low interest rate environment right now. I mean, we've not seen mortgage rates this low since for the past 40 years. So it's a good environment to be refinancing or locking in loans right now.
Thanks for the call, Ned. Good luck.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Here's an email from Mark. My wife and I currently rent. We want to buy. Our view is that we will get some of our housing costs back when we sell and return to her home country. And I guess, Mark, that depends where they are. It doesn't say. And it depends on how long it is before they plan to return to her home country.
That's exactly right. And probably the latter part, well, both are very important considerations. If you're in a housing market which has been you know, beaten down substantially and you think it might be nearing, you know, a bottom. So, for example, we've seen nice stabilization of home values in California markets. You know, markets like Detroit and Phoenix, many parts of Florida are still seeing pretty high depreciation rates, but they've slowed somewhat. So, it, you know, where you live is actually a big factor in that. But of course, the time horizon in which you're going to be in the house is probably even a bigger factor, because that's the time period over which you're going to have to amortize the closing cost and commissions and other things for purchasing the house. So the shorter that period of time is, the more attractive renting looks versus buying.
And as you look at that spreadsheet, if you can print it out on your computer, if it's 5 or 6 years, maybe it's worth it. If it's less than that, maybe not.
Yeah, typically, I mean, right now, again, in most markets, we're not expecting, you know, a lot further declines. But when I say a lot further, some of these markets could see another 5% come off. But that's relatively good for some of these markets, which are down 30 to 50%. So that's what I mean by minor. But for someone purchasing a house and wanting to live in it less than 5 years, 5% decline may not be a trivial number, particularly when you roll in the closing cost and commission fees as well. So that's certainly something that they need to be aware of.
We're talking about housing, the bleak picture again, with Stan Humphries, a chief economist for the real estate site Zillow.com. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Let's go next to Roger. Roger with us from Commerce, Michigan.
Hey there. I just want to comment that I've always viewed buying a home to be, in the long run, just cheaper than paying rent every month, paying off a mortgage. And I'm just one of those lucky ones that also happened to, when I saved up for years, happened to be buying, just recently. My other comment is that for people who would be, like, underwater in their, as far as their mortgages go, would it be cheaper to continue paying their mortgages rather than paying rent? I'll take my comment off the air.
Okay, thanks very much. Stan, what do you think?
Well, in terms of the first question, he's exactly right. It sounds like, you know, the question was about the long-term ownership of homes, and that's definitely true, that the longer you're going to own the home, the more the buy decision versus rent looks attractive. And that's certainly true going forward as well. I mean, if you're going to be in the home for, if you're staying in the home for, you know, longer than a 5 to 10 year period, if you're going to be in the home certainly for 15 to 20 years, then at that point, in most of these markets, buying is still going to look more attractive than renting. So that's a very important point. And to the second point, I believe his question was regarding, I'm sorry.
I sort of lost it too. I got called up in the answer to the first question. Anyway, let's go to Andy's email question. How much are local governments who rely on property taxes going to be affected by a flattening of the appreciation curve? How much were they a driver of the bubble?
So that's definitely been a big factor, and particularly in California markets where Prop 13 prevails and where a lot of these municipalities locked in, you know, their municipal budgets around home prices that ended up declining in some places 40-50%, and now are seeing substantial repercussions in terms of municipal services. So you've had entire municipalities like Vallejo, California, which have really had severe problems, and many other municipalities there are confronting similar problems where they had predicated their budgets on higher land values and property values, and now that's going away. And with Prop 13, it's important to remember in California that can be, you know, I guess it's not the gift that keeps on giving, but really the curse that keeps on giving, because once those homes have transacted, then they're locked in at very low price levels until the house sells again. So that can have long-term impacts for municipal budgets as well.
Let's go next to Tim. Tim with us from Cleveland.
Hello, yes, I own my home outright, and I just see $180,000 sitting there losing value and also losing the capitalization cost that, you know, if I had that money sitting in a simple bond fund at 3-4%, you know, that's another $5,000-$6,000 a year.
So you own your house outright and would like to buy it again?
Right. I'd like to move the clock back 10 years and rethink the whole process. Because if I could be renting and paying $700-$900 a month, and then have a $200,000 sitting in a bond fund somewhere, that would, I would think my lifestyle would be better off. I think owning a home at this point in my life is more of a lifestyle choice than it's, I need a place to live, and it's just, could I have had just a higher quality of life with less? Would the answer would my case would be yes.
Stan Humphries?
Well, I think that the important consideration there, it sounds like you are maybe second-guessing yourself for and having not engaged in some market timing, which, I guess that's, that can be an attractive proposition if you're great at timing the market. Unfortunately, most people are not great at timing the market, but certainly, if you had been able to sell at the height and then, sell at the height and then lay up into a rental property and then buy again at the bottom, you would have foregone the depreciation in the asset that's occurred since then. But that's typically hard, and most people, since housing is a place they're living, they don't want to engage in that type of market timing like they would with stocks and bonds. But and then going forward, I think if you were to, it sounds like you're mainly second guessing your decision in the past. Going forward, the fact that you own your house outright and that we're kind of near the end, I think, of the precipitous declines in home values, and it sounds like you're intending to stay in your house for a fairly long period of time in the future, then I would think that just staying pat right now is the best course of action.
Well, good luck, Tim. Appreciate it. And Stan, we have to ask you a question. Do you rent or do you buy?
I currently own, and it's an interesting question because I have gone through my own spreadsheets extensively in the past few months. Seattle, basically the Northwest, went through a housing recession about a year, year and a half after the rest of the country. So we've entered the housing recession later, and so we're still seeing fairly large depreciation in the Northwest markets, and I'm in Seattle. But I've certainly done my own, musings with my wife about whether we should we'd like to move eventually in 2 or 3 years, and we're thinking, well, if we're going to move in 2 or 3 years, should we try to lay up in rental housing while the houses are depreciating here or not? And, of course, I approach that strictly from as an economist, I pull out the spreadsheet, and my wife approaches it from the perspective of, we are not packing up this house.
I know who's going to win this one.
Yes, and right now I would like to say we're at a stalemate, but largely I believe she's won.
Stan Humphries, thanks for your time today. Good luck with that. Stan Humphries, chief economist for the real estate site Zillow.com. Tomorrow, political junkie Ken Rudin joins us. Primaries today in Florida, Vermont, Arizona, and where's one more? What am I missing? Arizona, Florida, Alaska, and of course we'll be talking about the Palin factor. Join us for that. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News.